This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And a good evening to everyone tonight for Wednesday, March 7th, 2012. My name is Doug Kelly, and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Doug. Good evening, everyone, and those who are joining us tonight. You know, it's a full moon tomorrow. It's actually the spring full moon. So we can talk about that later, but I just want to say happy full moon.
And we have our special show coming up here in probably in a couple of weeks. Yep.
Yeah, we do. A couple of weeks.
Our equinox show.
Yeah.
So, celebration, our rite of equinoctial equilibrium. Try saying that three times.
So basically it's just balance time.
Yeah.
That's a good way to say it.
But it's funny, these three-month periods seem to go pretty fast because we just had our winter solstice.
Yes, right. We did. I know time is just escaping us. And so if anybody, you know, welcome to the show. And if you want to call in, the number's at the top of the screen, 714-459-3973. And feel free to chat. I know Doug's got a great topic in store for us tonight. Doug, I'm following your lead tonight.
All right. Well, let me state that Metaphysical Universe is a educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, where we study and explore science, spirituality, empower the human spirit, and really, boiled all down into a nutshell, endeavor to raise awareness, raise the vibrational level of humanity. So we're glad that you could join us. We welcome those listening live, those listening to the archive. Tonight we're going to be talking about some different life skills. This in the business place. We're going to talk about how to become a fireproof employee. I know it's a little bit of a different topic, but you know, people work, and a lot of people are employees. So how can you be more successful as an employee? How can you really minimize the likelihood of being downsized or fired or whatever? So we're going to talk about some different methods that will really, really help you. We're going to discuss how business works in the real world, talk a little bit about cash flow stuff, and we're even going to touch on world-class customer service. So that's kind of the venue. And as Dr. Vicki said, if you have a question or you want to call up, you're more than welcome to. If you have questions, you can also ask them in the chat room. That is our live listeners. So,
you know, this is a really important subject because just what you just said about service, Doug. We have come a long way. In my earlier days, my first job was in retail, 1972. And I know everybody's going to say, oh, groan.
What century
is
that?
Yeah, I know. I started at $1.38 an hour.
Wow, that was $1.50 an hour.
Wow, you know, I mean, it was. And the first thing you learn is about service, because your business is service. It doesn't matter your product. It is service. I mean, you want your customers. You want your people. And, you know, things have changed a little bit in these last number of decades.
Oh, they have.
You know, 40 years, it's just, it's all kind of turned around where, you know, it's like the customer has to go in and please, I'll be really nice. Will you serve me? So, I mean, it's just a complete reversal. And I think that that's why this topic is so important. We really do need to discuss it as human beings.
It's a lot more important than a lot of folks even realize at this point. You know, and that's what is interesting about this show, at least from my perspective. A lot of the topics we have, I look at the titles and I think, you know, is that an attractive title? Will it get people to come in and listen, or listen to the archives anyway? And sometimes I just don't know. I think, you know, it probably could have more sizzle, but I don't know sometimes how to sizzle them up. But these topics that we talk about are hugely important. I mean, even if the title is not the most sizzling title in the world, there's always nuggets, there's always truths, there's always good things and skills to learn. And you know, it comes back to what I've always said. I have everything people desperately need, but nothing that they want. And these life skills require work. To be a better employee, it requires a little effort. To do anything well in life requires some effort. And so many people, due to social conditioning, due to whatever, you know, that's not their mentality. You know, give it to me on a silver platter. In fact, it's really the entitlement attitude. We're going to compare that in a moment to something, well, it's not what I call, I do call it, I didn't invent it, but it's called the ownership attitude. So let's talk about this topic of how to be a fireproof employee. And just as a little bit of a disclaimer here, I'm not going to give you anything that will absolutely make sure that you're never dismissed or downsized or fired. But, you know, I'm going to give you some great things, some nuggets, some tips, tools, techniques, that if you apply these to your life at work as an employee, you will greatly minimize the likelihood of being downsized or fired for anything. You certainly won't be fired for poor conduct or performance or behavior. And it will really even help them to think twice about downsizing you because you're such a great employee. So let's talk about this thing. Obviously, we live in a time when there have been many, many job cuts. It's kind of an interesting thing. I had actually written about this very topic, and I'm working from some of my notes. I've incorporated what I wrote into the IMHS degree program, course M15 on how to start your own ministry or metaphysics practice. I'd written about this back in 2001, and so here we are 11 years later, and it's the same story, different decade, you know, so it like lives on. So, yeah, there's a lot of downsizing, and a lot of people are unhappy at work, and there's a lot of managers that are unhappy with their people and vice versa. And so the point of this discussion tonight is to how to take this job and love it instead of take this job and shove it type of a thing. So
I like that. Can I steal it?
Sure. So, let me give you a little background and why I chose this topic tonight and why I feel so strongly about it. I started out, as we all did, as an employee. You know, I mean, gee, when my first job was when I was 14. That was about 9 years ago. And so I, you know, that's when I made $1.50 an hour, $1.298 an hour. Well, how much is that? So, you know, I started out as an employee, got fired from my first job, not so much because of my own fault, but because of the owner. And I'm not just making an excuse, it really was that. Went on to work successfully for many, many years. And when I was 30, it was just about 31, and that was about 4 years ago. Do you believe that? I wouldn't believe that. No, it's a total lie. Yeah. I started an office equipment business. I had been in that industry, and that's when I started my own when I was 30. That was back in 1931. That was 1990. Mm-hmm. So I'm more than, 34 or 5. Anyway, and so I got the other side of the deal. I had been an employee all these years, had a certain level of awareness, and when I started my own company, wow, you know, talk about getting thrown into the fire, you learn a lot. And so not only have I had that, but I've had other businesses since and employees, and all the stuff I'm going to talk about tonight comes directly from my experience. So we're going to talk about that right now. So I gave you a little background. There are three essential areas that I believe that are necessary for success in any job. Understanding how business works in the real world. Now, so you're thinking, I'm an employee, why do I need to understand how business works? Because you're part of it. That is the answer. You need to understand how business works in the real world. The second thing is providing world-class customer service, both internally and externally. And if you haven't heard this before, there's only one job. It's customer service. And I don't care if you're the owner of the company or the new hire. There's only one position. Customer service. You either serve the customers or you serve those who serve the customers. It's all customer service. So those two things, understanding how business works in the real world, providing world-class customer service. The third thing is the attitude you choose toward those two. Now there's another equally important area in business, and that's how the business owners and managers deal with their employees. You know, after all, an employee might be doing a very good job, but if the owner or the manager is unbearable, well, you know, life gets difficult. Work life gets difficult, if not impossible. So if you are a manager or a business owner, you need to make sure that you have educated yourself so that you're not one of them, that you are fair, that you are reasonable and balanced, and you know how to lead. And if you want to learn leadership and you haven't taken it, enroll in the IMHS degree program, because you can specialize in metaphysical organizational leadership. You can learn leadership principles. And the leadership training in the degree program is second to none. If I do say so myself, it's powerful, and it will make a huge difference. So if you're a manager or an owner, you need to get trained. And I'm not talking about just attending a day-long seminar here and there. You need to make sure that you're not the problem, because so many managers are the problem.
You know,
oh, dear
God.
Yes, go ahead. Break my stride, please.
If I can say, the best managers I've ever met in my life are people who can pick other good employees to make the manager look good. That's, to me, the single best kind of manager. And even back in the day, before my self-employment and the odd job I've taken over the years, I have always looked that way too. You know, it's like, surround yourself with really good people and you look good.
And that's the whole thing. So many managers are threatened by really good employees. And one of the things I teach in my leadership training is, what's the difference between a manager and a leader? Well, managers are task-focused. Leaders are people-focused. I want great people around me. You know, these employees that I'm leading, I want them to do better, or be, how do I put this? They need to do better than me. In other words, in their specific job, I may not be able to do it. That doesn't mean I'm not a great leader. It's like a coach on a football team. Think about this for a minute. Can that coach get out there and do what his players can do? No. They're the coach. They have a very unique set of qualities and traits and skills. They bring out the best in their people. That's their job. Their job is to not to be the quarterback. That's somebody else's job. So a leader understands that they need to surround themselves with great people, effective people, and they draw those people out. They train those people. They empower their people. You know, how do you empower your people? You give them appropriate control. So this is just a taste of some of the things that you learn in the leadership training of the IMHS degree program. So, you know, don't be one of the problem managers. Just don't. I'm not going to get into manager stuff tonight, but I had to put that in. All right. Yeah, a thought, Vicki?
Well, I was just going to add to the coach and the team, because it really is a good analogy, is people generally in mainstream society do not see it that way. And this is where I think if we did start to get a picture of the whole view, then we would all become just better people. And we all have the same task. We all work for money, and we want to make it enjoyable. And we have to understand that we are interacting with people all the time, no matter what level. And I think even employees have their own kind of example to set to other new employees or other situations that we're not even aware of. We set an example all the time, no matter what the position.
Mm-hmm. Good point. All right, so we're going to get into some of these points here in just a sec. I just want to point out, though, that you may not really enjoy your job if you're one of those that
my job sucks.
Yeah, you don't really like the work. You don't like where you work, whatever it happens to be. You know, if that's true, then it's going to be virtually impossible for you to excel and find enjoyment in what you're doing at work. And if you're not enjoying what you're doing at work, then it's misery, right? It's hell. So if you find yourself in this position, then do your company, those around you, and most importantly, yourself a favor and quit. Don't be stupid about it. Go find something else that you do love. In fact, discover what does bring you fulfillment and do that.
I'm going to make a poster out of that. Thank you very much.
Sure. You know, you, I can't tell you enough. If you're miserable at work, then you're miserable to everybody, okay? Go find something that you enjoy and do it. Well, the economy is so bad and I can't find a job. You know, I don't want to hear all the reasons why you can't do it. I want to hear all the reasons why you can do it. Make it happen.
You know, John just made a good point in the chat. Mm-hmm. He said, I've come to know that if you're in a job which you despise, then you're going to have more problems than what appears to be, because negative breeds negative attitudes.
Absolutely. Let's talk about how business works in the real world. And I admit it, I'm guilty. In my early years as a new employee, I had no clue how a business operated, and I only had a vague idea of what it was all about. And my lack of understanding went on for years, you know, quite unintentionally. It just went on for years. And it went on until, as I previously stated, until I founded my own business. And then I was introduced to a very heavy dose of reality. So what we're talking about here is my awareness was raised, and that's what we're trying to do this program. By a simple definition, a company, any company, is in business to make a profit by providing some product or service that people want or need. That's just the nuts and bolts, long and short of business. Making that happen is not always very simple. In fact, it's usually not very simple at all. And this is because every business owner, manager, they've got to juggle many different aspects of a business, but they primarily juggle three different aspects. And those three are employees, customers, and products or services. So employees, customers, products, and services. Those are the three. Every business in existence has three essential components or legs. Which of these three that I just mentioned, employees, customers, and then products and services, which one of those three is the most important? Now just think about that for a second. Which one is the most important? Well, let's use an analogy of a three-legged stool. We've all seen them, three legs. If you remove one of those legs, how stable is that stool? Well, it's not stable at all. It will fall over even under its own weight, let alone the weight of any business that might be sitting on it. So when it comes to employees, customers, and products and services, which is most important? They all are. And so many people, so many businesses, managers erroneously think that the customers are the most important. And I ask this question a lot when I did my seminars, who's more important, employees or customers? A lot of times people say, well, customers. I say, okay, fair enough. So you got customers, but you have no employees to service them. Now what happens? The business fails. All right, let's flip-flop it. You got employees, but no customers. Now how does the business operate? It doesn't. You have to have both. They're both important. Of course, your products and services are as well. They all three are required. I quickly discovered the reality of being in business for myself when I got into it. And you think about it, and that's the problem. We don't think about it if we're just employees. But as a business owner, I can tell you from experience what's going through a business owner's mind or a manager. Well, they're thinking about employees, including training, performance, various problems. A lot of times it's personal problems. They're thinking about cash flow, payroll, inventory, owner income, other overhead. They're thinking about sales and marketing, trying to remain competitive, trying to be visionaries, trying to figure out what's coming down the pike in terms of business. They're thinking about customer satisfaction and problems. And there's a myriad of other areas, especially if you're a business owner, accounts receivable, accounts payable, bookkeeping, taxes, and man, there are a lot of taxes, inventory, property maintenance, list just goes on and on and on and on. As a business owner, you wear a zillion different hats. And then you factor in the owner's personal life. I mean, their family, outside interests or hobbies, just their life. And so you can see that being a business owner, there's a lot of responsibility in being a business owner. And even a manager carries a lot of responsibility. They may not be responsible for all those different departments, but the business owner is, the higher upper management is. So we have to have the right attitude when we think about our position as an employee in any given company. Let's talk about the ownership attitude. This one little nugget here is worth more than anything. It's a hugely important issue. The ownership attitude. In my experience, most employees who have never owned or managed a business are simply unaware of all the different things and responsibilities that a business owner or manager has to contend with. I mean, I know I was unaware when I was an employee. It's quite common for employees to quickly conclude that a business owner is making lots of money and has it good. And this could be true in many cases, but I think it's probably rarer than one thinks, especially small businesses. Just by thinking about it for a moment, I've already kind of laid the groundwork. Business owners, managers have a lot to contend with, especially business owners of small businesses. And so when you are cognizant and aware of the business owner's plight, what they're going through, what they're trying to do, you begin to sympathize a little bit, and hopefully you take on what is called the ownership attitude. Well, how is that defined? This way. The ownership attitude simply means taking responsibility for and performing your job as if you owned the company. Not a real hard concept. You act as if you own the company. Now, I'm not telling you to, you know, start writing checks on the company's bank account and all that stuff. You can't exceed your authority level. But you act as if it's your company because, frankly, it is in many ways. You're part of that. You demonstrate the ownership attitude when you take full responsibility for your job, your career. You show initiative in performing your responsibilities. You mentally consider that you are part owner of the company and you do all you can to help that business grow. I mean, after all, if the business grows, so does your chances of advancing. So do your raises and things like that.
You know, Doug, not everybody wants their employees to have that kind of an attitude, though. A lot of, employers just want their employees to do as they're told. So it's difficult, then, to be an employee and take initiative as though we are in an ownership kind of position.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I entirely agree. You can take ownership by doing your job to the best of your ability, by taking care of your customers. Even if you have a micromanaging manager, not a leader, because leaders don't micromanage, but if you have a micromanager, you know, yeah, do as you're told, don't think. If I want you to think, I'll tell you to think. That kind of an attitude. Number one, you're in the wrong company, and whoever is above that manager should call me.
So this is one of these cases that if I really, you know, take care of my customers, if I quit this guy and go work for the competitor down the street, I take all my customers.
Well,
so that's kind of
in some cases that's true. So, you know, but that's a different thing. That's why I stated earlier, if you're a manager like that, stop it. Just stop that. That's not the way to be a manager. That's not proper. Get some training. All right, so if you as an employee are able to offer your maximum value and position yourself as a fireproof business asset, you put on that ownership attitude. And those types of employees, you can see them. You can recognize them. Have you ever gone to a restaurant and you just get a waiter or waitress who just gets it, is just really good at what they do? They just get it. Maybe you go to another type of business and you see them. They're a bit on the rare side, but you see them. Somebody who really understands, who really gets it, who really does a great, fabulous job. You can identify them. That's what I'm talking about. Now, the opposite of the ownership attitude is the entitlement attitude, whereas essentially you owe me. I'm an employee, you owe me. You know, you need to give me all the stuff. I'm here and, you know, you owe me everything. I don't really owe you anything. That's the entitlement attitude. Unfortunately, there's millions of those people out there who think that everybody else or the government or whoever owes them everything. They don't take personal responsibility. The entitlement attitude is shirking personal responsibility. The ownership attitude is embracing personal responsibility. And here's why this is so important. Let's talk about business 101. Let's talk about cash flow. And this is where I probably receive my heaviest dose of reality, cash flow. Now, think of this in terms of being an employee with your business. Just like your personal bank account, money flows in and out. And some people say more money flows out than in. But obviously, you know, I guess that can be true if they get overdrawn. But the fact is the same thing happens with business. Money flows in from sales, and it flows out from expenses. Now, cash flow can be good or bad. It can be a double-edged sword. It can be a beauty or a real terrible beast, the lack of it. Negative cash flow is, in all directness, a force to be reckoned with. And you'll quickly see why here in a second. Negative cash flow is completely unforgiving. I mean, just ask the business owner who's had to meet payroll but didn't have enough cash to cover it. Think about that for a minute. And a lot of employees work merrily along, not realizing all the things the business owner is doing to try to meet payroll. And you sweat bullets when you don't have enough cash to meet payroll and payroll's coming up. Obviously, you need to make some decisions about your business. But this is where these business owners learn the fine art of juggling, and they master it, to say the least.
Doug, I have an example, if I can inject here.
Go ahead.
I have an example that I would wonder who has the greater burden of responsibility here. I went in to buy some ink for my printer. I asked the girl who was working there. I said, I don't see what I need out on the shelf. Do you happen to have any in stock? Oh, no, if it's not out there, we don't have it. I said, well, you have a policy here that if you don't have it, then I can, you know, put a little thing on and I can get a discount, blah, blah, blah. And, I don't know about she just said, if we don't have it, we don't have it. And I said, okay, hold it here. Can I talk to the manager about this? Oh, now? I said, yeah, now it's good.
I'll make an appointment if you don't mind.
Now is good. And I'm smiling. I'm being very happy. I'm an amiable customer. I just want my damn ink, you know. And she says, oh, well, I said, no, if you would go get the manager, that would be awesome. Then, you know, I can see about getting some ink. Well, manager comes out. Oh, can I help you? I said, you know, you have a policy here. There's no ink in what I need out in the shelf. So do you think that I could put my name down and get a discount then for when you do get some in stock? And he looked around, looked at the girl. He lifted a curtain above the shelf, brought out the ink that I needed, put it down on the counter. I looked at the girl and I said, do you see the value of asking?
Yeah, really.
And you know, who then bears the burden of a young lady. Is she in training? Is she new? Yeah, who cares? To me, there wasn't a willingness, and yet she didn't even want me to talk to the manager. But is it the manager then who's responsible for trying to train the staff? And it kind of, it feels sometimes as though these two elements are colliding. You know what I mean? They're just colliding.
The answer to who's responsible, her or him, the answer is yes. Each in their own way. Ultimately, the manager is responsible for not training the employee. But again, this is what we're really focusing on employees. That employee, and this is the problem with so many, especially younger people, they simply haven't been trained. They lack the awareness. They haven't been trained. And that's why managers have got to train them. You know, you got to do that. So we're talking about how to be a fireproof employee. Well, tell me. All that employee had to do was show a little initiative and say, you know, that is a good question. Let me just double check. We don't have any. Let me check with the manager and let's solve this problem. And this is probably as good a time as any to inject, before I move on with cash flow, to inject a word or two about world-class customer service. Now, you can study this in the IMHS degree program in course M15, I think, on starting your ministry or metaphysical practice. My 9 points of world-class customer service. I'm not going to tell you what they are now, but I'm going to tell you what the number one El Supremo, top of the line, top, supreme, am I making my point? The number one world-class rule of customer service. Listen carefully, because here it is. The customer is the ultimate paymaster, period. And this is, if people would just learn that, it would make so much a difference. When a customer walks into a business, calls up on the phone, when a customer does that, they are your boss. Because if they don't pay whoever owns the company, the owner can't pay you. So even the owner of the company has a boss, and it's the customer. You don't get any customers, you have no money. You have no money, you have no business. So the customer is the ultimate paymaster. I mean, when a customer walks in that door, these employees ought to be tripping over themselves. How can I help solve this customer's problems? Because as a customer, I have a problem. I need a solution. It's not complicated. This is not rocket science here. You know, help
and
solve their problems.
It's not about the customer's always right.
No,
that's what I'm hearing you say.
No.
It's the customer is your job.
That's it. You solve their problem, and you solve it well. Even if you screw up, if you come back and take care of that customer, they will be your customer for life in most cases. Because
I
guess
totally
what?
Concur.
Now they know, yeah, you're human, but you'll correct it. And that builds trust. I would much rather go to somebody who I know, even if there's a mistake that is made, they will stand behind it and correct it. It's just the way it works. So,
which is just when I go to buy ink, you know, I mean, look, you get all these people not buying ink anymore because somebody says, oh, if it's not on the shelf, we don't have it. Then they have no customers.
Exactly. So this girl did not understand that you were the ultimate paymaster. She did not understand that you had a problem and you needed to solve it, or she needed to solve it. And if she doesn't solve it, guess what? You're going to go somewhere else and have somebody else solve it. It's like so basic, but yet people don't know it. Why? Because they have not been trained. And that's the purpose of tonight's program, it's in part. And all the programs we do is life training. So let's now merge this whole customer service thing into cash flow. When products or services are sold, cash is generated and it flows into the business. From this inflow of cash, expenses like payroll and overhead are paid, and they flow out of the business. What's left over is called net profit. Now, obviously, the idea is to have more coming in than is going out. That's just like our normal banking, our personal banking. We want more money coming into our bank account than going out. No different with the business. Now, the net profit, think about that. That's surplus money. You've had sales, you've had expenses, but you've got more money left over. Now, where does that go? That goes to raises. It goes to benefits. It goes to the owner income. You know, it's got to be there. And if an employee does not take on this ownership attitude and they don't do all they can to encourage more money coming in, there is going to be no money for advancement, no money for expansion, no money for anything, and the business will fail. Not a question of if, but when. Now, let's talk about the opposite of this scenario. And I'm talking about when you got more money going out than you got coming in. Obviously, you know the end of that, right? It's not going to work.
Welcome to my life.
You got more money going out than coming in. That means there's the owners don't get paid. Employees will end up getting let go because there's no money to keep them. So you have to ask yourself as an employee, what can I do to offset that? What can I do to ensure that I'm doing my job, that customers are being, their problems are being solved, they're walking away happy, and they're returning? I mean, that's the whole idea. You know, you want a customer to return. You want a customer to recommend you. And the only way they're going to do that is if they have trust in you, if you have helped them solve their problems. So as an employee, you've got to understand something. Money doesn't grow on trees for these owners. Now, some businesses obviously do much better than others. But every business is the same. You got to have more coming in than you got going out. And if you are not, as an employee, are not doing all you can to encourage that money coming in, if you don't see the customer as the ultimate paymaster, then there's a problem. You have to don on that ownership attitude. And if you do that, think about what the business owner's thinking. Think about what you would think if you were the business owner. I mean, I've had employees who were just absolutely phenomenal, outstanding. They had the ownership attitude, and I taught that, and they really applied that. And they just helped people. I've also had employees who were more of that entitlement. You know, yeah, I'm here. I punch the clock. I get paid for the hours I'm here. And as long as I'm here, I don't really have to do anything. And they were let go, obviously. And it happens all the time. You have horrible entitlement attitude a lot in the fast food industry. They just can't find trained people or people who get it. So you got to apply these lessons of cash flow, understanding. And here's another aspect of this economy, and I'm talking about being economical. At work, do you waste things? Are you wasteful at work, or do you economize on things? And I'm not talking about being unreasonably so, but if you can economize on supplies or equipment, if you can fix things, you know, keep equipment running, whatever the case may be, get more life out of it. You take better care of things, take care of whatever tools you use for your job, you're going to prolong their life. And guess what that amounts to? Money in the bank. And that money in the bank is then there for you in terms of raises and benefits and so forth. So you have to, you got to invest in yourself. When you invest in the company by being a top-notch employee, doing your job, solving your customers' problems, you're investing in you. It's just the way to say it when you have that ownership attitude.
Not only that, don't you think that this it goes to acknowledgement where somebody could very well advance in that company, even in ways they couldn't have imagined, by standing out?
Yeah.
You know, by doing a really good job, taking initiative. And if it's not that way, I tell you, somebody's going to walk in off the street and say, wow, hey, how much do they pay you here? I'll pay you more down the road, you know? I think that good employees, you know, in very difficult situations are stolen all the time. I have been in restaurants where I say, oh, I guess this girl's not going to be here long. Somebody's going to scoop her up in no time. She's really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so I think there's more than just one reason to do your job, do it well, and being respectful that you're getting a paycheck and you're looking after people, but that if you do have initiative to advance, that it can come in many, many different ways.
Mm-hmm. It can. There have been, when I've been out and about, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's some other service-related industry, here's a perfect example, and I wish I could remember the particulars, but it's been so many years ago. I was giving a seminar at a hotel in some city in the United States. I can't remember where I was. I was in so many. And during one of the breaks, it was outside, it was a beautiful day, and there was a fella, I wish I could remember his name, you know, and I probably wrote it down somewhere, but this fellow was just phenomenal. He was the groundskeeper. He was the maintenance guy. And he kept that place beautiful. He'd worked there for a few years. He had the ownership attitude. I told him all this, too. I mean, he was just phenomenal. I mean, if I had a hotel or a complex or something like that, I would offer this guy a job. I'd snatch him up. And I've come across people like that. There's been a few. I wish I had something to offer you. I wish I could hire you because you're so good. You just get it. You have the ownership attitude. You make things happen. You do a good job. You solve the problems, and you act like just like you're the owner, and that's how seriously they take it. It's just.
But I think it's in more than just that visible service industry, too. Let's say somebody is working in an office pool, for instance. There's still the who knows who and interacting with other people. I think that even inadvertently, we don't know how important some people are in our contact, even in, you know, low visible jobs. So yeah. I think that's something to keep in mind, too. Like, it might just be, let's say you're an office clerk, and you never know. It could have been over a coffee break, a lunch break, or somebody's boss noted something about, you know, it's a chain reaction of events. So remember, we talk about that universal energy, law of you know, that magnetic force. So it can happen in really some of the craziest ways, I think.
You know, there's a show on in the States. I don't know if it's on in Canada or anywhere else in the world. Undercover Boss. I don't know if anybody's
seen
that. Yes,
great show.
And we watched that, Tracy and I watched that, and I'm thinking to myself, with some of these employees, you don't know who you're talking about. And I'm still shocked that these employees, apparently they don't watch the show, but they don't get it, you know, that this new person coming in with a film crew is not, maybe, you know, no suspicious there. But these employees, some of them, not all of them, some of them do a great job, and that's what they're looking for, but some of them are like, oh my God, you know, do you know what you're saying? And you don't even understand who you're saying it to, you know, and you're on camera for crying out loud. I mean, my Lord, talk about the entitlement attitude, talk about lack of awareness, lack of getting it, and yet there they are, and they're all over the place. And that's why I've always said, be at your best behavior, not for other people, but for yourself. You are worthy of your own best behavior. And so you are who you are, regardless of who you're in front of. And that will also take you a long way. And so there's some good points there. Of course, that's a good show to learn both ways.
I love that show.
How to do it right and how to not do it right.
Yeah, it is shown in Canada, by the way, and it's a great show. I love it. I try to catch it every week.
Yeah, we do too. So anyway, we've been talking about how to become a fireproof employee, and let me just reiterate some of the points I've made. If there's any questions, anybody has any questions in the chat room, let me know. If you you want to call in, you can do that too. But we'll be winding it up in a little bit here. The point of becoming a fireproof employee is not that you're absolutely immune to outside forces. I mean, if the company goes bust, obviously you're going to have to look for a job. What I'm talking about being a fireproof asset to your company is that they don't fire you because you misbehave or you don't take your job seriously or you don't perform. If you don on the ownership attitude, acting as if you were part owner of this company, understanding that the customer is the ultimate paymaster, and treating them the best you can, solving their problems. If you make a mistake, you take responsibility for it and you correct it immediately. And you are on your own best behavior, not for them, but because that's who you are and you are worthy of your own best behavior. So I don't care if you have an irate customer. Mr. Customer, I can completely understand how you feel. I understand we made a mistake here, but please give me a chance to correct it. Let me go find out, and I will let you know immediately. You know, whatever. If they're standing in front of you, go check. If it's on the phone call, you get back to them. Mr. Customer, I know we talked about an hour ago. I still am working on this. I haven't been able to talk to who I need to talk to. I just wanted to update you. Remember, folks, lack of communication will kill any relationship. And so many of these companies don't understand that. They don't get back to you. Well, I told you I'd get back to you, but I got back to you a day later because I didn't have anything to tell you yesterday. You have to keep in touch. So take on that ownership attitude, provide world-class customer service, understand that employees, customers, and your products or services are all equally important. You can't have one without the other. You can't have a business without any one of the three. So understand that cash flow needs to come in than goes out. That means economize, get the most life out of things. If you had to pay for something out of your pocket, would you do it? Probably not a lot of times, but sometimes we end up doing that where we work. We don't mind being wasteful, not understanding that we literally are taking that money out of our pockets. Just today, I called up. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I'm, I'm anal about it, okay? I'm anal about customer service and people doing a good job. If you're going to put your sign out, hang your shingle out and have a business, you know, I expect you to do what you say you're going to do. So I called up a company today to get some questions answered on a possible construction thing, and I just didn't even know where to even what it cost. I had no clue what to even start thinking about it. And so I called up, and the guy was very reserved, not very friendly, didn't answer the phone very, very nicely. And it was like I was an imposition on him.
He's probably on his iPhone.
I don't know. But that's the way he acted. And he gave me the information I needed, but there was nothing like, well, listen, thanks for considering us. When you get ready to do this, we'd love to give you an estimate on it. My name is whatever, and you got my number. Please let me know what I can do to help. I didn't get that. Just, you know, well, okay, I thanked him. He says, yeah, okay, and goodbye. I'm thinking, dude, I'll never call you again, ever. Because if that's how you treat potential customers, you know, when I haven't even done business with you yet, what are you going to do to me afterward? I mean, do you think something magical happens when I give you money and now all of a sudden you're nice to me? You don't get that, do you? So I'm not going to call him back. I'm not going to do that because, I mean, this is what blows my mind. And now I'm going to get on my soapbox. They have a website, family-owned business, been doing a combined 40 years of experience, blah, blah, blah. Come to us. We'll do this. We'll do that. And so I call them, and they turn me off. This is just makes no sense. And this is why I want to slap so many business owners. You spend all this money on advertising, and it's expensive. And you put up your website, and you say all these things. But when push comes to shove, when you got to put your money where your mouth is, you fail miserably. So many business owners, so few Dougs. What can you say?
Well, I'm with you. I'm the first one to say if I get a bad or even that exactly what you're saying, somebody who's reserved, reticent in any way, right off the get-go, I don't go there again. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a real beef, not only the point about service, but is the undivided attention. It's like if I am speaking with you, I want to know you're listening to me. And that when you're speaking to me, I will give you my undivided attention. I don't want somebody thinking 20 things, looking down at their paper while they're, pretending they're listening to me, paying lip service. It is a pet peeve of mine. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to turn your head away. I don't want, unless you're saying, oh, well, hang on, just keep talking. I'm just going to look for it over here. That's fine.
Yeah.
But don't be on the phone while you're talking to me and looking at your iPhone and not really caring, because mm-hmm. it really does put people off. And I think the whole premise of what we all try to teach, Doug, is communications with people and improving human communications. Mm-hmm. We are all people who deserve to give the best of ourselves to others and receive that in kind. And I don't think that's a too big of an expectation.
I agree. So as an employee, you want to really up your personal net asset value to your managers, to the owners, then take on the ownership attitude. Do your job better than as good as you can, to the best of your ability. You know, have an interest in the customers. Have an interest in what you're doing. Don't take it lackadaisical. If you work in any kind of a service-related industry or store, retail establishment, don't be having personal conversations with your other employees while you're in front of a customer. Treat the customer, you know, focus on them, just like Vicky just said, focus on them, solve their problems, and they will come back. And your manager, your owner will love you, the business owner, not your owner, the business owner will love you for it because they see that you are just as interested in making this business a success as they are. And I'm telling you, you can't buy that. You can't find it. It's so rare. It's like mining for gold, and you find an employee like that, wow, you keep them because they're so hard to find. So what we're doing here is raising awareness. Think of the business like your bank account. Would you spend money on it? Yes or no? Would you like it if that money came out of your pocket? Probably not. So be responsible, be respectful of the company's resources as well. You do these things, they'll love you.
Well, I think it's also about the win-win we talk about a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Win-win.
And that's it. So many employees have a win-lose. Yeah, I'm here, but as long as I gain, it doesn't matter whether the company does. And again, I'm going to reiterate something I said at the very beginning of this program. If you hate your job, if you hate the company you work for, whatever it is, do your company, your customers, yourself, most importantly, a favor, and move on. Find something else that you like and do that. Find something that fulfills you and do that. Look, life's way too short and life's way too long to do something you hate to do every day. That's stupid. It's insane. Insane. It's the definition of insanity. I wanted to say insanity and insane at the same time. And so do something you love. Do something that fulfills you. And do something in which you can leave the woodpile a little higher than you found it. Something that will deliver greatness to the world. That's what it's all about. Because when you get to the end of your days and you're on your deathbed and you're looking back, you don't want to have that bad case of the woulda, coulda, shoulda, the if onlys, and the might have beens. We will look back and you want to say, no regrets. I did what I wanted to do. And I took risks. And yeah, there were some tough times, but there were some great times. And I lived like Jonathan Livingston Seagull. May you live the days of your life. Live, not exist. And too many people are existing, trying to eke out a living day to day. And all they're worried about is, how am I going to do that without any greater meaning in life? There's a lot more to life than eking out an existence. We need to live and live fully, live completely, and grow in your awareness. And if you are interested in any of the metaphysical type careers, the IMHS degree program will help you with that. There's a lot of great things you can do with that training, leadership, spiritual counseling, coaching. You can start a ministry. You can do research that helps others, speaking, writing, anomalous research, parapsychology, ufology, and cryptozoology is even going to be added here in the spring and beginning of summer. There's a lot of things you can do, holistic healing. There's a lot of things that you can do to not only find fulfillment in your life, but help others at the same time.
You know, if I might add that people who continue to learn, who are interested to learn, also are more fulfilled.
Yeah,
there's so much to learn in life. It's it can be, you know, everybody has their bad days. We all say it. But, you know, there's so many things. We couldn't live long enough to learn what we need to know, really.
Mm-hmm. Well,
again, I've enjoyed this hour. You know, I can't believe it's gone already, Doug. We just have such a good time.
We do, and we appreciate everybody tuning in live. And, you know, let other people know about the program. Recommend it to others because, you know, it's about life skills. It's about having more successful lives. It's about having more successful relationships. It's about finding fulfillment in life and understanding some of the deeper meanings of life, understanding more about existence and where we're headed and there's such an awe to it. There's such it's a wonderment to it all. And so let others know and visit Metaphysics Church or the MCHS Church, Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. There's a better way. If you want to get your degree, visit Metaphysics Institute. There's so many things we can do here. So appreciate your time. Appreciate those who are listening to the archive. Glad you could join us this time. We'll be back next week with another interesting topic. And
our equinox show on the 21st. So
yep,
we look
in a couple of weeks, we have our rite of equinoctial equilibrium. That'll be
again,
the first
thank
one
you
of those.
Very much. Yeah, thank you very much, Doug. I really enjoyed this hour.
Thank you too, Vicki. Thanks to everybody. Have a great week. See you next week. Good night. Mm-hmm.